Chapter 4 On the Nature of Man and Turtles. Summary. Previously on Epistaxis Anime. All of this fuss about my secrets when you've already got one of mine, Matt said, dropping a handful of crumpled up pixie sticks wrappers in the small trash can by the foot of his desk with a flourish. Do I get one of yours? The wheels of Foggy's desk chair rolled across the floor as he pulled it out to sit in. Get me drunk sometime, and maybe I'll tell you some. He rifled through the pages of the planner he noted all of his homework in, paused as if reading, then said less enthusiastically, Can we do that after midterms, though? Matt and Foggy get in some bonding time. Matt didn't set out to be jealous. In fact, he tried everything he knew of not to be. He started with his mind, reciting all the reasons it was perfectly fine that Foggy and Marcy were growing closer. Foggy could like anyone he wanted. Marcy wasn't the worst candidate for his affections. Foggy seemed to be having fun. It was unreasonable to expect that Matt could monopolize Foggy's attention forever. He soon realized, however, that curbing his jealousy required a two-pronged attack, one that also considered his body. So he took to carrying a tin of mints and popped one in his mouth every time he needed to clear out the scent of Marcy's lotion. And whenever Foggy mentioned her, Matt smiled. If he could just rework his neural pathways, he'd be golden. It was really too bad none of this made much of a difference. And so, every time Foggy invited Matt to join them in the library or the campus center, he found creative excuses not to go. Over the past few weeks, Matt had used the word rain check, both for the first time in his life and what seemed to be the 100th. He felt like he'd transformed into Mrs. Beach, a nervous lady with a brain donkey laugh who frequented Matt's church with one foot out the door, yelling over the parishioner's din that she'd take a rain check on confession this week too, Father Lantham. She and Matt were trying to stave off their reckoning. Foggy, for his part, didn't give up so easily. Mattie, my boy, can I entice you with a free coffee? I've got a voucher, Foggy sang during one such attempt. Matt removed one of his earbuds and asked Foggy to repeat himself. This was all part of his exit strategy. The busier and more distracted he appeared, the easier it would be to convince Foggy he was too in the zone to risk his concentration by switching locations. He already knew what Foggy didn't want him to this early on in the invitation process, that Marcy would be there too. It was like he'd developed a sixth sense in this area. When cornered, it was only natural to adapt. I don't know, Foggy. It's hard to listen to my screen reader at the cafe. Maybe when things have calmed down a bit. So help me God if you say the word rain check one more time, Foggy moaned at the ceiling, his head thrown back in defeat. Matt chuckled. We can make it up? He finished. You sly bastard. Fine, but I can't make any promises about bringing anything back. If Foggy's heartbeat hadn't betrayed him, time would have. About an hour and a half after Matt had declined his offer, he placed a plastic-wrapped cookie on Matt's desk. Matt swiveled around in his chair to face him with a raised eyebrow. I thought somebody wasn't making any promises. Yeah, well, every orphan needs a benefactor. Matt snorted. Okay, Charles Dickens. Hey, Foggy said, brightening. Maybe that's a Halloween costume idea. What do you think? A top hat? Fake mustache? The works? Having unwrapped his cookie as Foggy was talking, Matt lifted it to his mouth only to pause before chomping down. Not your worst idea, he said, in what was both a concession and an indictment of past crimes, then took a bite. Foggy sighed tragically. See, this is why you and Marcy would get along. You both hated my English judge idea, even though I'd be sexy as hell in one of those wigs, And it's not that corny to wear a law-related costume, he said, listing the parallels between them with his fingers. He smacked them against his palm, increasing the number with each additional comparison, like he was speaking a version of sign language designed for Matt's ears. You both get enjoyment out of making fun of me, he went on, finger number two hitting his skin just as Matt interrupted. Only when you deserve it, he said through a mouthful of cookie. Foggy huffed, then continued, you both don't like spending money if you can help it. That was three fingers now. And you both lick your lips when you're irritated about something, even though Marcy stops herself sometimes when she remembers she's wearing lipstick. Foggy stopped at four fingers, and it was good that he did because he couldn't very well catch his own fist and expect it to register as a five even to his own sighted eyes. A few crumbs of cookies stuck to the walls of Matt's throat on his swallow. He blinked back tears as he valiantly suppressed a cough, although he was equally successful at that as he was at containing his own thoughts and emotions run wild. Foggy's index of similarities between Marcy and himself had started out within the bounds of his and Matt's banter, but the third, and especially the fourth, were much more closely observational. Did Matt lick his lips when he was irritated? It was unnerving to be noticed for something he'd never consciously caught himself doing. But more than that, Matt felt elation, slowly escalating coughing fit be damned. If Foggy was paying that close attention to him and his lips, perhaps there was some validation to the way Matt hadn't been entirely able to let his last sliver of hope go. In a quick fire of synapses, Matt revisited the moment he'd told Foggy Marcy wasn't his type. Foggy had been relieved then, but what if that relief had not been toward crossing Matt out as a rival, but instead crossing Marcy out as one? Matt yearned desperately for this to be the case, barely registering Foggy's pounding on his back in a bid to drive out the rest of Matt's coughs. Almost as quickly as his hope had sprouted like weeds through the crack of a sidewalk, however, Matt took his own mental weed whacker to it. He sucked in the air his newly concluded attack had refused him, and in with it returned the irrefutable fact that Foggy had turned the same level of observation toward Marcy. Matt wasn't special. Anything he had argued about himself could also be applied to her. And who was he kidding? He knew which was the more likely. Thanks, Foggy, Matt said, using his sleeve to get at a fleck of spit that had settled near the corner of his mouth. Can't have you dying. How would I ever get through midterms without someone else suffering beside me? With Matt more or less out of danger of choking to death, Foggy crossed back to his side of the room and picked up his headphones. Matt returned his own earbuds to his ear, confident that Foggy's question had been rhetorical, but he soon took one out again. We're still on for drinks after midterms, right? He asked quietly, head angled down toward his shoulder. It took Foggy a second to register that Matt had spoken, but when he did, it was with an enthusiastic, yeah, totally. Matt bit back a smile. A pleasant warmth spread in his chest at the prospect of having Foggy all to himself. No school assignments, no Marcy, just he and Foggy and a bottle of booze and all the intimacy that entailed. So what if Foggy wasn't harboring the same secret crush that Matt was? With his epistaxis anime, it wasn't like he could ever have gotten close to Foggy anyway. Matt would take what he could get, and being friends was already pretty damn good. Midterms came, and if Matt weren't drowning in papers, he might have congratulated himself on having successfully avoided hanging out with Marcy and Foggy for so long. It was the kind of miracle God preferred, one where Matt put in most of the work. His excuses had gotten downright stupid. He'd suddenly taken up going to weekday mass, or at least saying that was where he was going. Even Matt had to draw the line with his Catholicism somewhere. But all of this seemed to matter much less with every midterm he sat through or turned in. Everything but his upcoming date with Foggy was inconsequential. Okay, it wasn't a date, but he wasn't above denying himself a little fantasy. Matt waited in their room for Foggy to return from his last midterm, Punjabi, alternately leaning back casually in his desk chair and lying on his side on his bed like one of those boudoir portraits. Even he didn't know what the intended effect was, but it didn't seem right to kick off his and Foggy's night of debauchery, or whatever the PG-13 smuggle a cheap bottle of vodka into the dorm room version of debauchery was, with just any old greeting. When Foggy did walk in, Matt was midway through another switch between positions, his ass directed toward Foggy as he clambered back onto his bed in full view of the doorway. "Hey there, beautiful," Foggy said, chuckling to himself as he unloaded his backpack, reached inside of it, and pulled out what Matt gathered to be a large plastic bottle, likely a juice container. Matt followed Foggy's movement to set the bottle down with a thunk, next to where he'd been keeping their vodka on his desk, his heart still showing off how many backflips in a row it could pull off after being called beautiful, sarcastically or not. "Is that a mixer?" Matt asked. "Oh yeah, I got cranberry. I hope that's all right." "Fine with me," Matt said, now safely in a cross-legged position. His use of the word fine, in this case and always, was relative. He'd never quite abandoned the native dialect he'd grown up sharing with his dad. But where that relativity usually erred on the side of the negative, here, the lingua franca translation was more akin to, "Good God, Foggy, I would drink the vodka straight. I would down a whole vat of ethanol if it meant doing it with you." Matt needed to turn it down a notch. At this rate, the amount of utter fluff he felt towards Foggy was going to come back to bite him later. Whether that was tonight, in the form of a slasher flick appropriate bloody nose, or later, when he finally got confirmation that Foggy had no interest in slumming it romantically. He stood up, leaving the spot on the bed he'd fought so hard to sit normally in, and went to grab the single mug he used as an all-purpose cup. He rubbed a finger on the inside of the rim, detected dust, and resolved to rinse it at least, if not wash it first. "You need your cup rinsed out too?" he asked Foggy, who had busied himself pulling several crinkly bagged snacks from his backpack. "Oh yeah, probably." Foggy handed him his own mug, a withered tea bag still stuck to its bottom. Maybe Matt would dip into the communal soap dish after all. A trip to the floor kitchenette, and a few minutes later, Matt returned with the clean mugs and they set about mixing drinks, which was something neither of them knew anything about. "If I knew what a ratio was, Matt, I'd be majoring in math or something," Foggy scoffed, when Matt pointed out that Foggy had poured the vodka for a lot longer than he had the cranberry juice. "Maybe you should be bartending," he said, after he had already shoved Matt's drink into his hand and gathered up his, "since you seem to have math in your name, Matthew." Matt laughed. "Did you pregame? Or are you already drunk just off the alcohol fumes?" "I'll have you know," Foggy cautioned him, "that the Nelson men all have tolerances off the charts. My Uncle Jim once won a bar fight, not because he's any good at brawling, mind you, but because even after 10 shots, he was as clear as the light of day." Matt threw Foggy a skeptical look as he sat down on the end of Foggy's bed with his mug of vodka cranberry. "Tell me, Foggy, how many shots was it you had again the night you went to that party after orientation?" he inquired innocently before taking his first sip. Sharp, much too sharp on its way down. Matt placated himself with the knowledge that it likely didn't burn as much as Foggy's had the aforementioned night as it came back up. Humbled, Foggy admitted, "That may have been 3, but hey, nobody starts out as a pro." He sat down next to Matt and clinked their mugs together, saying, "I'm going to pretend you didn't cheat and start drinking before we said cheers." They each took a drink. Matt could already feel the warmth from the alcohol blooming in his stomach. It helped serve as a reminder that he too, with his minimal drinking experience, was still a lightweight. He wondered how long it would be, without the momentum of a party, before they got tired and fell asleep. Heat, separate from the alcohols, flooded his gut as he briefly envisioned himself dozing, loose and floppy, together with Foggy on his bed. Thoughts such as those, though, as he knew all too well, were dangerous. He squeezed his eyes shut, quickly replacing the thought with the grossest thing he could think of on such short notice, his memory of Foggy's retching noises after that party. Whatever plans his nose had been concocting dissolved instantly, and he relaxed a bit. Foggy's voice called him back to the present. Oh shit, I forgot to ask. This is cool, right? It's not gonna mess with your meds or anything. No, no, Matt hastily reassured him. Foggy had been much calmer about Matt's fake illness since Matt had let him start reminding him to take his likewise fake pills. After, of course, he had commented on just how janky they looked. I've seen vitamins that looked more legit than these, prompting Matt to realize entirely too late that he would have been better off passing off some type of dietary supplement as his medication. Counterfeiting-related regrets aside, Matt's lie was looking to have complicated things less than he'd originally thought. Maybe, even, it had been the right course of action. Excellent, Foggy cheered. A proper night of getting sauced it is, then. Sauced? Matt quirked an eyebrow. Sloshed. Wasted. Shwasted. All of those and more. Foggy gulped down more vodka cranberry, and Matt had a hunch that his motivation for doing so was at least partially tied to the way it kept coming close to splashing over the sides of his cup with each one of his gesticulations. Matt doubted that alcohol could possibly work so quickly. After all, he hadn't even had to tip back his mug to get at the liquid yet. But it sure seemed like his impulse control had already flown the coop when he said, I'm more interested in the and more bit myself. He hit his front teeth with his mug in his haste to get it to his lips and stop himself from saying anything else incriminating. Right, Foggy said, scooting himself back on the bed so he could use the wall for support. I suppose I did owe you a secret, or something like that, didn't I? Matt stopped guzzling his drink. It seemed Foggy hadn't noticed the flirtation. At least one, he said, fighting to sound normal after the brief scare that had left his mug half empty. Okay, give me a minute to come up with something. Foggy patted the bedspread, made, perhaps, for the first time since move-in day, Matt noted, beside him. Get over here. I may be an honorary old man, but your back will be killing you too, soon, if you stay out on the edge like that. Matt let himself be coaxed to move so they was sitting next to Foggy again, this time with the wall behind them. He knew it was probably the worst decision he could make. With the warmth from Foggy's shoulder pressed up against his, bleeding into the fabric of his shirt, it was going to be near impossible to keep his feelings, and thus his nose, in check. But although he felt one of the telltale pangs of attraction that typically preceded his nosebleeds, he could neither smell nor taste the oncoming blood. Strange, he thought, then decided not to question his luck. Foggy broke off his humming, signaling that a search for a worthy secret to confess was over. I wanted something that'd knock your socks off, so consider this your warning because I think I've found myself a doozy. He inhaled deeply, preparing Matt for the gravity of what he was about to say. Did you ever see the live-action Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies, you know, in the before times? Yeah, actually, Matt said. My dad took me to see the first one. Matt had no time to get wistful before Foggy's next statement came crashing through his budding nostalgia. Well, that movie was my sexual awakening. What? Matt laughed. He screwed up his face in what he thought was entirely warranted confusion. Do you remember April, the reporter lady? I was like 8, but I thought I was in love with her. I regret to inform you that my stocks are still on, Foggy, Matt teased him gently, knocking his shoulder and rocking them both. Yeah, yeah, Foggy said, breaking into a barely controlled giggle. He dropped his voice to whisper when he explained, April's only half of the equation, and then giggled some more. Matt blinked, more confused than ever. Foggy couldn't possibly mean... He chose to weigh his words carefully. At least tell me we're not talking about the rat. Foggy launched into a new round of hysterics, his whole body shaking and sending pleasant vibrations through Matt, who found himself leaning into them with a hopelessly fond smile on his face. Once he'd finally gotten a grip, he denied the accusation with an indignant, "God, a splinter? I'm not that depraved, Matt. I'm a man of taste. So clearly I had a crush on Donatello." Matt downed some of his vodka, making a show of it so Foggy could see how he'd force Matt to turn to alcohol as a coping mechanism. Then he said, as impassively as he could manage, "I was a Michelangelo fan myself, although I don't remember desiring him carnally." "You must have repressed it then." Foggy shook his head sadly. Matt was first to start laughing this time, little spasms of mirth moving up and out of him in spurts until they gathered enough power to force his mouth open and his head back. Foggy held onto his arm, attacked mercilessly by his own army of the giggles, and the two of them were left with tear tracks to rub away once they'd recovered themselves. Foggy nudged Matt into sharing a secret of his own, which Matt figured was fair, considering a pixie sticks addiction that didn't even exist, hardly compared to Foggy's reptilian fantasies. He told Foggy about the time he'd overheard two St. Agnes's nuns in the throes of passion, although he fabricated the detail that he had been anywhere near the administrative office door. Foggy, of course, was scandalized, and Matt considered it work well done. They traded several more secrets over refills of vodka, and it wasn't long before Matt's stomach hurt from all the laughter, and sitting had become slouching, had become lying side by side. And further, side by side, that curious positioning that implied some kind of divide melted and grew fuzzy at the edges as they shifted in the name of comfort, Matt's legs propped up on the wall and his head pillowed on Foggy's stomach. When Foggy asked him whether he was happy in that position, Matt insisted it was the best way to re-oxygenate his brain, which had become shockingly dumb, Foggy. If Matt wasn't operating at his usual level of intellect, it wasn't solely the fault of the alcohol. In between navigating his and Foggy's conversation, he was hard at work trying to answer two burning questions. The first concerning how Matt had thus far managed to escape his nose's cunning machinations, despite being the closest to Foggy he had ever been. And the second regarding implications made by Foggy's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles revelation. To answer the first question, Matt dredged up ancient notions of the scientific method and independent variables, working his poor brain under conditions no workers' union would ever agree to in the process, and formed a preliminary hypothesis. Alcohol was the only novel factor. Perhaps Matt's current luck had something to do with the way it interacted with his system. He vaguely drew a connection between his nose's sudden shyness and the phenomenon colloquially known as whiskey dick. That explanation would do for now. He made a mental note to take advantage of Columbia's connections to a plethora of academic journals later. Matt's second question required more intensive poking at. There were vagaries, complexities, problems of taxonomy. Foggy had admitted to having certain kinds of thoughts about a human-sized male turtle. But did this mean Foggy was actually attracted to men? Had he come out as bi to Matt? Or was this just the kind of thing that was normal for children, but alarming for adults? Where did the turtle end and the man begin? And what did it mean for Matt, who was a man, but not a turtle? Foggy's hand, which had been combing lazily through Matt's hair for several minutes, stilled. "You didn't fall asleep with your eyes open, did you?" he asked, causing Matt to realize the silence they'd lapsed into had been stretching on for quite some time. "I was thinking." "What about?" Matt rolled onto his side. With his ear pressed into Foggy's stomach, it was like he had a direct line to each of the burbles processing his cranberry vodka within. It should have been gross, but he supposed his feelings for Foggy had hit critical mass, because to him, even his digestion was unbearably cute. Matt mulled over a response to give Foggy. He didn't quite dare ask him outright about his sexuality. But there were still other areas of the turtle issue commanding his curiosity. "Why Donatello, and not one of the others?" he asked. "Are you kidding?" Foggy said, his accompanying chuckle bouncing Matt's head up and down where he lay. "He's basically a genius. He's resourceful and has a head for details. He's got a little bit of that nerd thing going, which, you know, hot. Oh, and the staff. There's something so cool about being able to kick ass with the simplest of weapons. Again, hot. He's the hottest one. Fleetingly, Matt regretted that Stick had left him before he'd had a chance to learn the bow staff. Would it have made a difference if he'd been able to show off? Would that have tipped the scales in his favor and away from Marcy's? Of course, even a martial arts demonstration would have had little sway if Foggy was straight. But before Matt could get lost trying to infer what role gender played, if any, in the criteria Foggy had just laid out, Foggy threw his question back at him. Why Michelangelo for you? Matt smiled softly. Somewhere between a deliberate move and one that allowed for drunken deniability, he sought the signature of Foggy's body heat with the hand he'd splayed out on the comforter and took his shirt sleeve. Rubbing the fabric between his fingers absently, he cobbled together an answer from the disparate scraps of information he could remember about the movie and cartoon. I don't know. I guess he's good with people, which is something I admire. But he's not shallow, either. I mean, just because he's lighthearted doesn't mean he's not reliable or dependable, you know? Foggy didn't say anything, not verbally anyway. His heartbeat, on the other hand, Matt was sure was trying to communicate something. He just didn't know what. It was fast, the kind of fast that Matt would usually flag as distressed. Was there something in what he'd said that had rubbed Foggy the wrong way? He moved his hand instinctively from the cuff of Foggy's sleeve to cover his knuckles and squeeze his hand in reassurance. At this, Foggy's heartbeat bolted like a spooked racehorse and was off thundering in his chest. Matt froze, positive that he'd crossed a line, yet unable or unwilling to take his hand back until Foggy gave him something more concrete to go on. Finally, Foggy said, his voice coming out dry and scratchy, "I have one more secret, Matt." His own rapid pulse beating through the tip of his thumb where it touched Foggy's skin, Matt croaked out a complimentary, "What?" Foggy's tongue rasped over his lips, chapped courtesy of all the alcohol that had passed between them, as he licked them and swallowed. The breath he took whistled down his throat like wind through a tunnel of naked trees. "I like someone." Foggy's words were the last shard of ice he stabbed Matt with. Splinters of cold broke off inside him like shrapnel. He held Foggy's hand, and Foggy had responded by telling him there was someone else. It was as clear a rejection as any. Matt felt his chest contract. He knew he should congratulate Foggy or ask him what his plans were for asking Marcy out. That was what a good roommate would do, what a best friend. He hoped he qualified as Foggy's best friend, would and should do. Any other response would surely give his feelings away. But he couldn't. He could barely get out the words, "I know," and pull his hand away. He could barely tell the disappointment and hurt in Foggy's sigh from his own. So that was all he did, and he didn't do anything more. This was all he and Foggy were. They weren't, and wouldn't ever, be anything more. End chapter 4.